I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
1-800-Flowers.com is more than your birthday, anniversary, or just because gift-giving destination. We put our hearts into everything we do to help you celebrate all life's special occasions with friends and family. From our farmers and bakers, florists and makers, everything from 1-800-Flowers is made with love every step of the way, because we know that nothing is more important than delivering a smile. To learn more, visit 1-800-Flowers.com/ACAST. That's 1-800-Flowers.com/ACAST.
Underwear, armpit hair, many imitators, but no one compares.
Badass Women's Hour XL with Harriet Minter, Natalie Campbell and Emma Sexton on Talk Radio.
1, 2, 3, 4!
Welcome to Badass Women's Hour with me, Harriet Minter. This week, we're talking to Shadow Chancellor of the Exchequer, Annalise Dodds, about what it's like to be the first woman in the role and her plans for the economy post-COVID-19. Plus, we meet author Adele Parks, a Badass Women's Hour favourite, to talk about her new book, Just My Luck, and what happens when you win the lottery.
Now, we are really lucky on Badass Women's Hour XL tonight because we are joined by the Shadow Chancellor of the Exchequer, Annalise Dodds. Hi, Annalise.
Hello, it's a real pleasure for me to be here with you tonight. Hi, Harriet.
Oh, well, thank you for joining us. Let's start. I want to check in with you. How is the job going? You're about a month in. I think it must be very different from how you thought it ever would have been in your imagination up until this year. What is it like being Shadow Chancellor of the Exchequer?
Well, I have to say it certainly wasn't a role that I'd ever anticipated filling. I'm really delighted to have been put into this position because, I'm really, really interested in this policy area to make such a difference, obviously. I mean, what's more important to people's lives than the economy? So I'm delighted to be doing it, but I really didn't ever expect that I would end up doing it, and certainly not
in
these...
Can I ask why not?
Yeah. I suppose it's not the kind of thing that when you're a child you necessarily imagine, really. I certainly always wanted to be an ice skater when I was young, helped by the fact there wasn't an ice rink near me, so I could think I would have been brilliant if only there was. So it really wasn't something that I'd anticipated. I mean, I had a career before I went into politics. I worked as a university lecturer for a very long time. Very, very pleased to be doing it now, but obviously very, very difficult circumstances, I think, for everyone, aren't they? We're all adjusting to this new reality for as long as it needs to last.
It is a new reality, but it feels like a reality that's changing really by the day. Every day something new is happening. And one of those things, obviously, at the moment, big debate is around education and sending kids back to school. We've seen today lots of the teachers' unions saying that they disagree with the government. They don't want schools reopening. They don't think there's a safe plan for them to do so. They don't think it's safe for teachers, don't think it's safe for children. You have previously said that you wouldn't be comfortable sending your own son back in June. Do you support the unions in that stance?
Yeah, so actually, Harriet, this is quite an interesting case because I didn't say that I would not send my child back to school. In fact, he's not even in the age group. Well, I've got two, but the one who would have been, who was at school before, he's not in the age group covered. I think it's interesting how this debate is really getting very kind of personalised. Essentially, what I was trying to say was, and, you know, I find this when I'm talking to my constituents, whether they're parents or teachers, that, you know, people want a route out of this. They want to find a way forward. We've had, you know, quite a lot of vitriol, if I'm honest, poured around about this. Really what we need to do is we need more evidence. We need more information. We need government to be sitting down really with the unions, working this through and somehow get to a better solution. Because if we don't have confidence around those arrangements, lots and lots of parents are not actually going to send their children to school. I mean, I personally would follow government guidelines. As I say, it wouldn't apply directly to my son anyway for the start of June because he's not in one of the year groups covered. But I think to have that confidence, it's really important.
So do you think the unions are right to be advising teachers that actually they shouldn't be going back to work right at this moment?
Well, I think there's a bit of a discussion about whether they ever said that shouldn't happen. I mean, again, I think we've got to take the heat out of this. We've got to somehow have a sensible discussion about this. We've got to get, you know, government's got to open the door, sit down with the unions, listen to what they've got to say, also to what parents are saying, you know, to what local government's saying as well, because we've got some different councils saying that they're concerned about it. Let's work it through, get an approach which everybody can be at least relatively happy with, because, you know, in all different directions, there's risks in all different directions on this. The more open they can be, I think, and transparent, the better for us getting a solution to this issue.
I'm understanding why you have a reputation as the peacemaker of the Labour Party. Do you think there is a clear way out of this right now? I mean, obviously, you're in opposition. If you were in charge, what would you be doing?
Well, I always think that the more you're open with people, the more you're likely to be able to take them with you. And, you know, I think we've seen an incredible response from people to the different directions that have been put out there by government. You know, it's incredible how people have complied. It's amazing how people have worked together to support each other. It's really moving, I think, actually, how people have supported each other. So let's treat everyone like adults. You know, let's get the information out there and the evidence so people can see it. Let's have a sensible process. I think that's the way to deal with it. Above all, I think kind of, you know, typecasting, say, teachers as on one side and parents on another side, I don't think that's helpful, because I think people have got a range of views about this. You know, let's try and work it through. Ultimately, you know, we've got to have the children's interests at heart, surely, and that of wider society. That's what should be driving all of this.
Do you think the government isn't being open with the public about its plans?
Well,
certainly as a member of the public, I just assume they don't have any, and that's why I'm not hearing them. But is that? Do you think there are plans that we're just not being told about?
I don't know if there are plans. I think what would really help would be if we saw the evidence behind different announcements. You know, if we could see why. And Keir Starmer's leader of the Labour Party, you know, he's been saying this. Well, if we could just see the scientific evidence. And, you know, sometimes that might be quite inconclusive. You know, it might not point all in one direction. It could be quite balanced. But let's just get it out there, because actually those countries where they've been kind of more open about this kind of thing, you know, whether we're talking about Denmark or Germany and others, they tend to end up, it seems, in a better position, actually, in dealing with this disease. You know, I don't think we should, or certainly policymakers shouldn't, have to think, oh, we've got to kind of hoard that information within government. I really don't think that's helpful.
One of the things that I think is interesting about the current situation is that what we're seeing is, from my point of view, there's a split in the union. So we see Boris Johnson making announcements as Prime Minister of the United Kingdom, but then Scotland saying, actually, we don't agree with it, so we're not going to do it. And Wales saying, nope, sorry, please note the signs at the borders. If you're coming across the border, you're going to have to behave differently here. And it seems to be sort of actually pushing the various countries further apart. How would you start to bring us back together so that it is a United Kingdom again?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's really critically important, again, that we actually have a strong attempt from government in Westminster to talk to those other governments. You know, I think if, obviously, we had the announcements on last Sunday night, which did come as quite a surprise to a lot of people. It wasn't clear to me that the Scottish and Welsh governments had been fully involved in all of that. You know, it would have been really good if we could have had a uniform approach across all of the UK. I mean, I'm not saying we should have that on everything, but on something like this, you know, it is a problem when you've got different approaches building up. So let's have the discussion at a really early stage. If there are concerns in different areas, then let's try and deal with them, you know, rather than maybe announcing something and then Scotland or Wales not being happy with it and adopting a different approach. I think that's quite important. You know, it feels to me sometimes that government almost wants to kind of announce things as a surprise in their press statements. And, you know, that's fair enough. I guess they want to capture the media's attention, that kind of thing. But the problem is, if you haven't consulted with others who will be affected beforehand, pretty quickly the wheels can start coming off those announcements. And I think we've kind of seen that a bit, really, over the last few days.
People have felt, I think over the last few years, that Labour hasn't really provided as effective an opposition to the Conservative Party as it could have done. It's now under new leadership. Keir Starmer, the new leader, you are the new Chancellor of the Exchequer. Between the two of you, how are you going to take on the Conservatives in this period, particularly given the fact that you're facing a Conservative government that's behaving not as we would expect a Conservative government to usually behave? It's massively expanded the state. It's pumping lots of money in to support people. How are you going to provide the sort of, A, an opposition that challenges it and really holds it to account, and B, differentiate yourselves from it?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's really important that at this time we're not engaging in opposition for opposition's sake. I mean, ultimately, I think all of us, whatever our, you know, political standpoint or political party that we support, we desperately need the government to succeed on this, really desperately. And clearly, we've got a big mountain to climb on that. So, you know, we're not going to be clapping from the sidelines where things aren't working. And there have been, unfortunately, a number of areas where, you know, we seem to be quite far behind other countries. Obviously, we will be raising that with government, and we will be saying to them, as we have been, for example, in relation to testing and tracking and tracing, well, you know, here's some solutions that government could adopt. Please, can you look at these urgently, you know, to get this sorted out? Or again, with provision of protective equipment or situation in care homes, etc. So we will put those issues on the agenda. We'll put forward solutions to try and get them fixed. And, you know, I think that's what people really need. Obviously, we're in the middle of a national crisis. So it is a different way, I suppose, of doing politics, but I think it's a really important one for the national interest.
Finally, Alice, you are the first female Shadow Chancellor of the Exchequer. How does that sit with you? Do you feel the kind of impact of being the first woman to hold that role? Do you feel like you are, I guess, representing for the women who come after you?
Ooh, well, it's certainly an enormous privilege. It really is. And I suppose I have noticed over the years, I mean, I've worked on economic policy for quite a few years now, and I've often noticed that there are many fewer women involved in that. And yet, of course, the economy affects women just as much as men. In fact, you know, if we look at the last few years, it's often been women who've been very, very strongly impacted on by economic policy decisions, often negatively. So, you know, I've always felt that there was a real need for much more female representation in economic decision making. So, yeah, certainly I feel the pressure of that on my shoulders, I suppose. But, you know, I really hope there will be many more women who will come into this area in the future. As I say, it's so important.
Do you think it will change how you view and implement policy? I'm just thinking, you know, when we look at the impact that coronavirus has had on people's economic lives, actually we've seen how hard hit women have been by it. We're more women in key worker roles, more women likely to be furloughed or lose their jobs because of it. I think one in three women is in a kind of low paid area, which means their low pay is now even lower, so it's more economically unstable for them. Do you think that actually, because we now, and this maybe this is too simplified, I don't know, but because we now have a female shadow chancellor of the Exchequer, that you will see policy differently?
I mean, I think it's a question of whether we have people in my kind of role who are alert to those kinds of inequalities. And obviously, there have been many men who have been, you know, just as much as I am. But I think it is really important that we consider them. And I mean, you spelled out a number of the real challenges actually currently. I think obviously we're also seeing very, very significant inequalities when it comes to the impact of all this on Black and minority ethnic people, clearly in terms of the impact of the disease, but also the economic impact. Mm. And obviously for those who were at a more unequal position income-wise before this crisis, it's just made the situation worse. So, I think the whole range of inequalities that are being made worse because of this. You know, that between men and women is a really critical one, but there are others as well.
Fantastic. Annalise Dodds, Shadow Chancellor of the Exchequer, thank you so much for joining us on Badass Women's Hour XL.
This is the Badass Women's Hour podcast.
And on the line with us, one of our favourite authors.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalised plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.
It's Adele Parks. Hello, Adele.
Hey, hi, Harriet. How are you?
I am very well. How are you?
I am surviving. I did very well, actually. I'm quite... I mean, it's not the launch I was expecting, but none of us are living the life we're expecting, are we? Let's face it.
We're not, and I was thinking kind of, in a way it would be a cliche to say, well, this is must be easier for writers because you like being alone in your garret typing away by yourselves, but you're a very sociable writer.
But you're not wrong. I think it is easier for writers than most people because we have been used to working at home for a long time.
Yeah.
I mean, I've worked at home for 20 years, you know, 20 books, 20 years. Nearly all of that was working from home. However, my kind of safety valves, the valves to make me a normal human being, was the fact I could go into London, have a couple of meetings now and again, a couple of times a month, see my mates at the weekends, all the things that are normal. But you know what? The important thing is staying safe. And I'm very lucky that I'm able to continue doing my work. So, the launch has been
very different.
I am.
You are doing some great work. This is book. What number book is this? Like 587.
587, but other people call it 20. Yeah. No, 20 in 20 years. Who knew? I mean, I. People keep saying, "Oh, did you plan that?" And I'm like, no. The first book that comes out, you're just surprised there's a book out, aren't you? You know, it's just like, oh, that's good. Then what's that about? But quite early on in my career, my then editor said to me, oh, you know, you want to become that author that everyone waits for in the summer holidays. And then if you do that, you need to be the person who gets a book out a year. And I'm such a girly swot. I was like, OK, I can do that. And here I am. I don't know why. But I'm like, so here I am 20 years later going, yeah, look, I'm doing it. Gold star for me.
1 a year. Still doing it. Tell us what this one is about.
Okay, so Just My Luck is about three couples that have been friends for 15 years. They all met just after they had kids. And they're in that kind of incredibly intense sort of friendship group that as an outsider, you might look in and think, that's a bit unhealthy. But if you're inside it, you think, oh, these are my people and I'm great and life's marvelous because I have these people. Yeah. And their kids have grown up, and they've got other kids as well besides the first three. And the kids are all kind of dating each other. They all got the same school. They're busy mates. They're all massively interlinked. They go on holidays together, and they have Christmases and that sort of thing. And one of the rituals that they're really keen on doing, and they have done since the children were babies, is they buy a lottery ticket as a syndicate group, the six of them. They each pick a number, and those six numbers, the same numbers that are played week after week after week and have been 15 years. Most of the time, they don't win anything. They win a cut, like 20 quid or something, and put it towards the takeaway next week, that sort of thing. anyway, we meet them when two of the couples are sort of saying to the third couple, they're a bit over it. It's just a bit chippy. It's just a bit kind of a one night. They've all had a bit too much to drink. And they start sort of telling, you know how we have those nights where you start saying things you sort of regret when you sober up? And you say things like, you know, oh, that's always annoyed me about you a bit. And they have that conversation. And in the end, a sort of a little tiff goes into a great big rift. And they end up falling out. And two of the couples say they don't want to do the lottery anymore. And the third couple hear, not, I don't want to do the lottery anymore. They hear, I don't want to be your friend anymore. We think we're beyond you. We think we're past you. And we've socially gone, kind of socially climbed the ranks a bit better than you have. And yeah. So we're kind of leaving you behind. And they're devastated. However, they do still buy a lottery ticket the very next week with the exact same numbers. And that week, the numbers come up. And Lexi and Jake, yay, good, I want that reaction. And Lexi and Jake win £18 million. And, of course, the other two couples, they want in on it. They want a share of this. And legally, not entitled if they've dropped out of the syndicate. But is there a moral question here? What do you owe old friends? And the book investigates kind of, you know, it gets quite dark because people do some really bad stuff to get money. They just do. That is just a fact of life. Yeah, it gets quite dark, and it basically investigates what we should buy with, you know, with money, what we shouldn't buy with money, what we can and what we can't. And surprisingly, nearly everything is for sale. Nearly everybody has, well, everybody has a price. And it looks at, you know, what if winning means losing everything if everything is your friends? That's it. There you go.
I mean, it sounds amazing. I'm already hooked.
Oh, thank you.
What was the sort of spark of inspiration? Because I know that you are a sort of collector of stories almost. You overhear something or you see something in the paper and you almost file it away and think at some point I'm going to make a story out of it. Do you know what it was that inspired this one?
This more than any other book. I know the exact moment. So it was a friend's birthday party. It was a lunch party, quite boozy, quite a laugh, loads of people I hadn't seen for a long time, catching up with. And one of the guys I hadn't seen for a wee while was, he is the financial director at the lottery company. And he started telling me some of the stories. And I was just like, this is gold. Tell me more. And he was just sort of telling me, you know, the fabulous things. All obviously very confidentially. The fabulous things that happen when people win the lottery and the excitement of it all. And also he kind of went into quite some detail of the duty of care that the lottery company have for winners, which I thought was quite interesting, because obviously people who win a lot of money, it's not the same as inheriting it and perhaps being born into money and understanding it that way. It's not the same as having nothing and earning it, but earning it gradually and getting it that way. It's a very sudden life change. And so the lottery company are pretty clever, actually, and kind of quite careful about the kindness aspect of putting people in touch with the correct experts and all that sort of thing. So he was saying to me, you know, we put them in touch with banks and money advisors and maybe estate agents, but we actually advise them not to move too quickly and keep their social crowd around them. And then just he sort of slipped into conversation. And if it's a massive win, we'd obviously put them in touch with security. And I was like, sorry, what's security? And he said, you know, for kidnap risk and things like that.
Oh, my gosh.
And I was just like, yes, Harriet, you're so right. Because I was just like, can you imagine the minute you've just been handed this check thinking, hello, all my dreams come true, not a single thing to worry about ever again. You're suddenly told, actually, you might have something to worry about if you go public and if people find out about this win. And it's a thing you've never had to deal with before. And I literally was like, yeah, this has been a great birthday lunch, but I'm now leaving because I need to go home and write this novel. It was just that moment. It really was. And it that doesn't always happen. Sometimes you sort of play with things for a long time. But I just knew there was something about thinking this is the dream come true and then finding out that there are other elements. With every dream, there's always a nightmarish element too. And I wanted to look at that.
What did you get to speak to any lottery winners, or did you just sort of imagine what you would be doing if you'd won that money and how you would be spending it?
No, I did spend some time with them, and it's quite interesting. Again, the lottery company, again, they look after them. They sort of have these, they put them in touch with each other, because so few people can understand that sudden wealth. Uh-huh. And so they have forums and they have parties and they you know, they mix with one another because they get it. They each get it. And nearly everybody else they come into is on some level either overawed or jealous or resentful or just kind of sycophantic or whatever it might be. But if you are somebody who has had exactly the same experience, they can relate to each other better. So that was very exciting, talking and communicating with lottery winners. And there were so many stories that actually didn't make it into the book, because the book is an imaginative story and it didn't happen. But I think the most surprising one for me, there was one guy, he just never spent a penny. He didn't give it away. He didn't spend it. Nothing.
It just sat in his bank account.
And I couldn't get my head around it. And the best I could come up with, because he couldn't really explain why this was the case either. but the best I could come up with is he was kind of doing the lottery, never with the hope of thinking he was somebody who was that lucky. And it was almost enough for him to know that he had been that lucky. And he didn't actually need to do anything about it, which I find extraordinary. He didn't even give it to, like, just give it away. Just give it to a charity because it's your first thing. Nothing. Isn't that remarkable?
It's absolutely
insane.
Bizarre.
Well, not insane, because of course the man is completely sane, obviously, but it's just, it takes some understanding. But you see, there's nothing as strange as real life and real people.
That is true. There is now a strange folk, as they say. Are you already, given that we're in lockdown and none of us have got much to do apart from obviously write the novel that none of us are writing, but are you writing a new novel? Have you got the next one
on
the go?
You sort of know I am, don't you? You know that I will say yes. You would have eaten your hat at that point if I'd gone,
honestly, I would have been relieved. I would have been like, oh, she's mortal like the rest of us. No.
I did have the first two weeks I wandered around going, why is this different? This shouldn't be different. I should be able to be the same. I should be able to carry on. Yeah. I couldn't. Yeah. So there were a couple of weeks where it just takes some processing, doesn't it?
Yeah,
and I don't think any of us are even there yet. I don't think any of us really understand or compute what we're going through. And then I realised my entire life, what I've always done to cope with difficult issues is to just write. And so if anything, I wouldn't say I'm writing more, but I am managing to kind of keep up my normal 1,000 to 2,000 words a day. So I'm sort of 2/3 of the way through next year's book, which is where I would normally be at this point. I'll take a pause from it for a few weeks now while I'm doing promo for Just My Luck. But when I, you know, it is the thing that helps me breathe easy.
Yeah.
I mean, at the moment, all of us need that, don't we? We need to find out if that's gardening or crying or yoga or whatever it might be. You need to find the thing that makes you just go, yeah, okay, I can put one foot in front of another and get on with this. And mine is writing, so I'm very happy to be able to sort of throw myself into that.
Oh, well, I cannot wait to read it. I have absolutely done as your then publisher recommended, and I wait on all of the books. Fantastic Adele Parks there telling us about her new book, Just My Luck. They are always brilliant. Great lockdown if you need one.
You've been listening to Badass Women's Hour. If you like the show, then help more people find us. You can tag us or talk to us on social media using @BadassWomen'sHour. Or you can be really lovely and leave us a review and a rating. 5 stars, please. It helps boost us up the podcast rankings and allows other people to find us. We'll be back next week with more badass guests and in-depth chat.
Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF Podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.